Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Thursday in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. My name is Adam Bittner, assistant sports editor for multimedia at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joined as always for our weekly show by Paul Zeiss for the Zeiss is Right video. Paul, how are you?
I'm good. Adam, are you as excited and pumped as I was the other day for the Tyson Bagent story? I mean, how do you not love some nobody from nowhere, from Shepherd's University, coming out and Wally Pipping Justin Fields and by winning a game for the Bears? And then you read the kid's backstory. That, to me, is the best story of the NFL season so far. Tyson Bagent, same high school, by the way, as Kevin Pitsnoggle. I don't know if you remember Kevin Pitsnoggle, the West Virginia basketball legend, basically the hillbilly, you know, that went back, and he's like a math teacher now or something like that. Same high school as that produced Kevin Pitsnoggle, produced this Tyson Bagent guy. I mean, you know, his dad is a world-class arm wrestler that does a CrossFit business. I went on his website, and, you know, he sells CBD products and things of the such. His nickname is the Beast. I didn't want to start. I didn't want to give you that. But I'm just so excited about that story. It's the best story of the year for me. But go ahead. Let's talk about the Steelers.
Yeah, one of these days the Steelers will have a story like that. And I guess Doc Hodges was the Steelers version of that, right?
Yes. I know. But Doc Hodges, just watching the Bears game and looking at this guy's stats, Doc Hodges was never as good as this guy is.
Well, maybe someday he will be. We'll see. Paul, I do want to talk some Steelers with you, get into that, talk about Kenny Pickett's receivers specifically. That's our favorite pet topic on your show and my show here on the Post-Gazette Sports Now YouTube page. Before we do, just want to remind you, this show is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. There's no better place to get windows and doors installed in your home than Pella, who can help you save on energy costs year-round. Schedule a free in-home consultation with your local Pella Windows and Doors to find the right product for your home and budget. Give them a call at 866-593-1560 to discuss your project further. That's 866-593-1560 to get started planning on your new windows and doors installation with Pella Windows and Doors of Pittsburgh. Paul, I wrote in my PFF grades post that I do every week on postgazette.com, just kind of a weekly recap of, you know, what interesting grades Steelers got on ProFootballFocus.com. The focus of my article was kind of Allen Robinson and Calvin Austin III, who've really become pretty invisible the last few weeks. Calvin Austin caught that big touchdown in the Las Vegas Raiders win, but pretty much since then, the two of them have gone dark. 68 receiving yards total between the two in three games. I think they have 7 yards after the catch total. So even when they are getting the ball, they're really not doing much with it. At what point do we start to turn the focus to them for why this offense seems to, you know, be able to succeed late with a couple, you know, deep passes to George Pickens? Deontay Johnson got involved this week. But if you only have one or two legit receivers, Paul, doesn't it make it hard for Pickens and Johnson to do what they need to do? Doesn't it make it hard on Kenny Pickett? And when do we start talking about these depth receivers as a problem for this offense?
Well, you and I have been talking about it for 6 months now. And, of course, there were a lot of people that didn't like what we had to say, and they disagreed. And I got emails, and I know you got, you know, emails. And on the chat, we've had people argue with us. But here's the thing. Last week with Deontay Johnson back should have been a week that Calvin Austin went crazy, right? Because now he's, you know, we keep hearing about how he's got all this ability and this wiggle and the speed and all this other stuff. Shouldn't he have had a couple of chunk plays last week with Deontay Johnson back. It hasn't happened. Maybe it will. Maybe a couple of weeks from now, we'll be saying, wow, boy, Calvin Austin now has really settled in and become a big weapon. Allen Robinson is exactly what we thought he was. Like, why is anyone even surprised? Listen, he made a pretty big play the other day, right? Right before the quarterback sneak that sealed the game, that probably didn't make the first down marker, but they got a good spot. The play right before that, I think it was Allen Robinson, caught like a 7 or 8 yard pass, right? He ran a little route, caught the pass, and set that play up, I think, right?
He did. He had one catch for 7 yards, though, Paul.
Exactly.
In the Baltimore win, it was 5 catches for 29 yards. And then against Houston, it was 1 catch for 8. And all of these are kind of short plays. I think the game he had 5 catches, he averaged 5.8 yards a catch. It's starting to feel like Ryan Switzer reloaded here.
Well, that's what he is. I mean, that's what we said. But again, that's what I said he would be. At the beginning of the year, I said, if they get 400 yards and, say, 4 or 5 touchdowns out of Allen Robinson, they will have squeezed every single thing they could get out of him, you know? And it looks like he's on pace for, what, about 300 yards, maybe 280 yards, 300 yards. You know, but I'm not surprised. That's why I said when you sign a guy like him, you know what he should be? Your sixth receiver who's a depth guy who doesn't play unless, you know, somebody gets hurt, who maybe, you know, occasionally, because he runs a good route, he's smart, he's crafty, all the other cliches, you put him in on third down here and there, you know, where just exactly that situation where he can run a 6, 7, 8 yard route, get himself open. But that's what he is. He should be receiver 6, not receiver 3. And Calvin Austin is a guy who, you know, I mean, he's young, so I'll continue to be open-minded. That, you know, what we've seen in camp from time to time could actually become who he is. But I have a sneaking suspicion that he's going to be a guy that we're probably going to be underwhelmed with pretty much his entire career. And the other part of it is, Adam, if you remember, part of the reason, well, you know, he's going to do a whole lot in that, you know, jet sweep package. To my knowledge, and I could be wrong, has he run a single jet sweep this year? Maybe once. I can't even think about once. I'm just saying.
I think he had a carry on Sunday. He had one carry for 1 yard. He had one carry against Houston for 5 yards, and he had one carry against Cleveland for -2. That's it. That's the whole thing.
So that's, let me see if my, my math is correct. That's 3 carries for 4 yards.
Something like that, yeah.
The ultimate weapon. I mean, again, that's my point. My point is, I said they needed a third option, and frankly, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if they went out and got a third option. I don't know how they would pull it off. I don't know if there's guys available for trade. I don't know. But last year, you know what? I guess, you know, you could say last year the Bears were able to trade for Chase Claypool. Maybe there's somebody out there that's like that, that's got, you know, ability, that maybe he's disgruntled or they're not being used right or whatever. But I'm just telling you, in my mind at least, this, especially because Deontay Johnson, you know, got banged up. It's a brutal game. Receivers get hurt a lot. It's a tough position to keep guys healthy after 16 or 17 games because it's such a tough position. I'm just saying. To me, I think that this is their biggest weakness. I've said it. It's come to fruition so far. And unless one of those guys develops as a third option, I mean, here's the scary thing. Who's option 5? Is it Miles Boykin, probably? I don't even know who option 5 is. That's the scary thing.
Well, you led into my next question well, Paul, which is, I mean, how can you go into the season with, like, those guys at 3 and 4? Yes, but really no one interesting if you know, 5, 6, 4, 5, 6. It's not only do you not have the impact at that, like, second level of your receiver group, but you don't have that, like, you know, like, rookie guy, that undrafted free agent who, you know, could add some sizzle. Who's that guy that came from the XFL? I forget. Was it Hakeem Butler? Was that his name?
Yeah.
He was like 6'7" or something ridiculous.
Right.
I would find him more useful even if he's not very good, just because he's something different than what they have in that room compared to all of these, like, you know, special teamers. That's what they are. They're using the receivers room to staff the special teams unit rather than the other way around. And I wonder how you can do that in today's NFL.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, and that's, you know, what speaks to Adam in the offseason, what they did. They emphasized, they focused on what? Building the running game. That's what they did. They went out and got linemen, right? They went out and drafted a lineman and a big tight end, right? When that's what your emphasis is, and that's when your focus is, and then you say, oh, yeah, well, oh, by the way, we need to get this veteran receiver, Allen Robinson, you know, who again, I mean, I could have told you what you were going to get from him. In fact, I did tell you what you were going to get from him, which I'm okay if he's receiver six, you know, but not when he's receiver three. That's a bad thing. So, you know, they talked all about, you know, and it's clear they wanted to be a running team that wins with defense. Where did all their resources go? In the running game and their defense. And so nobody should be surprised by what's happening here. Nobody should be surprised that this is where we're at with it, because this is how they set it up. And so, you know, I think that the offensive scheme is what it is. You know, I thought the play calling was better on Sunday. I think Kenny Pickett gets better a little bit each week. You know, we see a little bit more from him every week. But if you don't get better receivers, I mean, I think there's going to be a ceiling to what he can be.
Yeah, I think, Paul, that's the thing that bothers me, is that, you know, you're kind of stacking the deck against your own quarterback. Lamar Jackson, I wrote about it in my questions post that gets posted on Monday morning. He had 9 targets that he was able to complete passes to on Sunday, and the Ravens looked great offensively. Kenny Pickett, I think, needs more of those options. And I think the most frustrating part about Calvin Austin and Allen Robinson right now is they didn't do much when Deontay Johnson and Pat Freiermuth were off the field. You know, you would think that they'd be able to step up, as they'd be stepping into like the second and third options kind of roles, because you only had George Pickens out there. They didn't produce there. And now what are they going to do with those guys coming, you know, hopefully in Freiermuth's case, back to the lineup? And the tight ends too. I just wanted to mention that quickly before we wrap up this receiver discussion. I mean, they're non-entities in this offense too, Paul. I think if you had a reliable tight end, if you were using Pat Freiermuth like Mark Andrews or something, then you could say, okay, well, maybe you don't have the best receivers, but you got a tight end that you're hooking up with consistently and who's making impact for you. We're not seeing that. And when Mike Tomlin was asked about it, he basically said, and it's a matchup league, we don't have that advantage in some of these games, so the tight ends don't get the ball. Again, that doesn't seem sustainable to me if Kenny Pickett can only throw to two guys and defenses know exactly where the ball's going at crunch time.
Especially since you basically just admitted you can't scheme. You can't out-scheme some defenses, which is incredible to me. That's an incredible admission. You're basically saying, you know what, defenses are dictating to us what we can do, which I'm sure to some degree there is that, but if you can't scheme your tight end open from time to time, that probably is the biggest indictment of your offensive coordinator that we any of us could come up with.
Paul, I want to get into a couple other Steelers topics. Mike Tomlin's comments this week. The first one that stuck out to me is he called Patrick Peterson, quote, essentially Cam Sutton in the way they use him in the slot, move him around, versatility. The problem I had with that, Paul, and we talked about this a little bit on our live stream Sunday, is he's not as good as Cam Sutton. I looked at Cam Sutton's got a pretty solid Pro Football Focus grade. He's making a lot more money. He's a better player. The Steelers went with the lesser player, and I think they're paying for it.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, Kim, didn't we look at their salaries the other day?
Yeah, it was a $4 million per year spread.
Right, $4 million per year spread. I think maybe they thought they were getting something different when they got Patrick Peterson. You know, I think they thought he could still play, which, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that he can't still play.
I said this in the stream, Paul. I think he can play if you're deploying him in the right situations, but not if you're running him out there on an every down basis. I think you're running him down.
Not when he's QB1. I mean, not when he's CB1 or whatever we want to, you know, those stupid phrases now we use. Not when he's CB1. To me, again, they probably thought they were getting a better version of Patrick Peterson. And obviously Tomlin's not going to throw him under the bus. But the big deal is there is, you know what, they paid so much money to other positions that they probably felt like $11 million a year for a corner right now is a luxury they can't afford. Well, corner is probably the most important position on the field besides your rush ends in this defense. And so, to me, as good as Minka Fitzpatrick is, if you were going to tell me, listen, you have a choice to, you know, have – what was the kid from Virginia Tech that was their safety, a first-round pick? Terrell Edmonds. To have a Terrell Edmonds type back there, right? But you're going to get a Jalen Ramsey type or whatever at corner. Or would you rather have Minka Fitzpatrick, right, and a basically an average corner? Every single day of every single week I'm going to spend the money on the corner. But they didn't do that. They spent it on a safety. And again, you know, Minka Fitzpatrick's really good, but I will say this about Minka Fitzpatrick. When he's really good, he's a high-impact player. There's long stretches where he's invisible. And so –
there's long stretches, Paul, where he's being forced to make up for other shortcomings. Right. And then you limit the impact. I mean, we've been saying that for years. It's like when Minka Fitzpatrick's allowed to do the things that he wants to do and can do and what he's great at, I think he's worth every penny. But if you're weak at the positions, if he needs to creep up and run support, well, he's not as good as useful a player. Even if he's objectively good, he's just not useful the way you're deploying him. It's kind of the same thing I'm saying about Patrick Peterson is they're not putting these guys in positions to be their best.
No. And that's the thing about it. But again, you put Joey Porter out there as your top corner. I think it probably changes everything just because he's a guy that's got upside. He's likely to get better. He's likely to improve. You know, we're so concerned about winning and grinding out every single win every single week. I don't know that you're necessarily giving yourself the best chance to really be good down the stretch because he's the guy that should be playing. And then you figure out between the other two who's better in the slot and – you know, who's better on the outside, and you go from there. But to me, the only way you get better in the NFL on defense is by playing. It's unfortunate, but because of the CBA and because of all the rules and this, that, everything, the number of padded practices they have where you're playing reasonably at full speed is literally less than 10. I know that the CBA allows like 11 or 12 or something like that, but most teams don't even come close to that number. And even when they're in pads, they don't tackle. You know, they hit a little bit. You know, they do the thud thing, but they don't take people to the ground and all that other stuff. They don't play full-speed football. The only way you get better is by playing on Sundays. So, to me, you know, the idea that somehow Patrick Peterson is as good as Cam Sutton, well, no, he isn't. And I think it's very definitively no, he isn't. And here's the thing that's a little bit scary. It ain't like Cam Sutton was Deion Sanders either out there. But again, you compare him to what they have now, and it's kind of like, well, you know, actually he was actually pretty competent compared to what we're watching right now.
Yeah, I certainly agree with you there. Paul, I know you wanted to talk about Mike Tomlin's comments kind of about their identity and how he doesn't care as much about stats, you know, either his team's stats or the other team's stats against his defense, as long as they're winning. And right now they're winning. I know you had some thoughts on those comments, so I'm just going to let you go on that.
Well, it's along those lines. You know, the question was posed to him, like, opposing receivers have some absurd amount of, you know, yards against the corners, against their corners. In other words, their corners are losing the matchups badly. And, you know, he went into this rant. Well, you know, he basically did the condescending thing where it's a you guys kind of stat. You know what I mean? Or I forget exactly what he said, but I'm not into you guys as, you know, your stats or something like that. And then he basically was, oh, you know, as we go through the journey and we keep winning games, you know, those little details will clean up and, you know, they'll get better and all this other stuff. That doesn't sound sustainable to me. Because at the end of the day, if your receivers are getting toasted, or I mean, if your corners are getting toasted by opposing receivers every week, eventually they're not going to drop passes. I mean, the Steelers have to be leading the league in opponent drop passes. But you can't let guys run free every week. I mean, you know, Cooper Kupp last week probably dropped more passes in that game than he will the rest of the year. You know, he was running wide open. And, yeah, I get it. Part of their model is the guys up front are going to get pressure, and that's going to help their corners, and that's going to help in coverage. But, you know, it can't be every single time they block those guys that, you know, it's a pitch and catch. Because eventually you play good teams, or you play teams that aren't going to drop passes. You're going to give up big play after big play after big play. And you know, at that point, it's one of those things that it's not sustainable. There are a lot of stats that I find to be very much how would I say this? Very much overrated. But receivers running free through your secondary and having lots of yards against your corners, that's not something that is irrelevant. You know, we've talked about it, and I know people get really sensitive around here when I say it. I mean, this team's lucky to be 4-2. They probably should be 2-4, you know. And actually, if the Raiders make a few plays, they're 1-5. But I'll give them the Raiders game. But the Browns game, the Ravens game, you know what? Those two games are two games that come to mind where it's kind of like they should have lost those games if those two teams didn't play stupid and make so many mistakes. So my point is, it's good that you keep winning. And there's something to be said. I wrote about it the other day. There's something to be said about the winning gene or knowing how to win games and all that other stuff. But there are certain things that just aren't sustainable. And allowing receivers to have big yardage every week and be free running through your secondary every week, that doesn't seem like it's sustainable to me.
I agree, Paul. We're going to get into some more local sports topics here after a quick break to thank a couple more sponsors, Goldberg, Persky, and White. If you were diagnosed with mesothelioma or lung cancer, call your local attorneys at Goldberg, Persky, and White. For over 40 years, their firm has represented thousands of lung cancer and mesothelioma victims. Call 1-800-COMPLEX or visit gpwlaw.com for a free consultation. Also want to thank Propel Schools. Propel's 13 public charter schools in Allegheny County build a solid academic foundation for lifelong learning and offer more personalized instruction at every level during your child's kindergarten through 12th grade education journey. Give your children the quality education they deserve. Learn more and apply at Propel Schools by visiting propelschools.org. Paul, the big game outside of the Steelers this week was Penn State against Ohio State. Penn State comes up small once again in Columbus. James Franklin's now 1-9 against the Buckeyes. There's been some calls for his ouster by Penn State fans saying, listen, this guy's hit his ceiling. He can't beat the teams that you need to beat to get to the national championship level, to get to the college football playoff. What I've said and will continue to say is this is a guy who I think can get you into the 12-team playoff, and maybe one of these years you line up with a path that does not include Ohio State, that does not include some of these teams that you match up poorly against. You know, he's beaten Utah in a Rose Bowl. He's beaten Washington in a Fiesta Bowl. He's beaten Memphis, a team you might see in the playoff, in a Cotton Bowl. He can win some big games. It's just not against these teams. I'd like to see him get that chance in the coming years. But Paul, how many years do you wait now on James Franklin if you're Penn State, or has Penn State hit its zenith as a program? Is this the ceiling for them?
I don't believe it's a ceiling, but I also don't believe that the people that run Penn State particularly care. I don't think winning a national championship is a priority with Penn State, the administration. I think they're, you know, tickled pink that as long as he keeps winning 10, 11 games, going to a good bowl game, he's got 110,000 people coming to watch the season every single year. And to your point, isn't next year when the 12-team playoff starts, or is it 2 years?
Next year.
They're going to be in the 12-team playoff, you know, probably 3 out of 5 years, if not 4 out of 5 years. So there's, you know, the idea, if it was still going to be a 4-team playoff, right, for the next 10 years, I might entertain the idea, well, you know what he's doing, you know, you're leaving money on the table every year or whatever, however you want to say it, but they're going to be a playoff team almost every year. I mean, he's got the program rolling where they recruit as well as anybody. They generally do not lose games they're not supposed to lose. He gets 10 wins every year, right? And the thing about it is, in some years he's gonna be, you know, have that breakthrough and split, maybe not Ohio State, but all you gotta do is beat Michigan. There'll be some years we probably won't have them both on the schedule.
No, I don't think there's any year that they have both of them on the schedule.
Right. So the bottom line is, you know, he's gonna win 10, 11 games every year, regardless of what people want to say. You know, is that good enough? Again, like to your point, you get into the 12-team playoff, right? I mean, where are they at right now? 10?
Yeah.
Something like 10? I mean, let's say they're 10. You know, what that would put them against the 6? Right? No. Yeah, 12 would play 5, so 11 would play 6, right? 10 mm-hmm. would play 7. Okay. I mean, we're talking about, what, a second or third place team from the SEC? Or, you know, maybe even a group of five team that's undefeated? I mean, you mean to tell me he can't win that game? So my point is, calls for James Franklin's head are silly because, A, what he's doing, I'm sure Penn State is happy with, the administration there. They understand football pays the bills. But they don't strike me, they never have, as an administration that is, you know, all in to try and go out and, you know, be a football superpower. You know, as long as they're winning, the kids are staying out of trouble, they get 110,000 people to come to say, you know, Happy Valley, you know, 7-8 times a year, whatever it is. I think what he's doing is fine. And the 12-team playoff makes it even less likely that they would be willing to make a move because he's going to be in the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as we learned in the NFL playoffs, you just kind of got to get in the tournament to have a chance. And I think that's been Penn State's big problem, too, is you take this loss against Ohio State. What, this was week 7. Years past, they take it in week 4, and you're out of the picture already. You're not the team you're going to be at the end. I think about that 2016 team that had 2 losses before it really kicked into gear. I would have loved to see that team in a 12-team playoff. I think they were one of the best teams in the country at that point. Also, like what was last season when they went to the Rose Bowl? That team by the end of the season was really, really good and explosive. It was just it didn't look the same as that 2016 group, but I think it could have beaten some better teams. So I think if you get to detour around Ohio State, more possibility opens up, and I would not throw that possibility away with a guy you know can get there. But I also understand people's frustration, Paul. And if you're going 10 wins every year and you really have no shot to win a national championship, how long are you getting 110,000? Fans in the seats? How long are you getting those recruiting classes if they don't really believe that you can deliver? And something I'm going to talk about with Seth Engel on our Penn State podcast is, even if the recruiting's better than it was under Joe Paterno, it's still kind of not where it needs to be to win a national championship. You're not getting Marvin Harrison Jr., and we saw that was the difference on Saturday. So a lot more Penn State talk coming soon. We want to get to a couple of other topics as well. Paul, is there anything worth saying about Pitt at this point after or have we kind of reached the end of the road with them other than just kind of waiting to see if they can develop?
The only thing I'll say about Pitt is this. It looks like they have their quarterback of the future. He's pretty good. This kid is pretty good. I'm not sure that he has the right offensive coordinator calling plays. I'm not sure he has the right head coach to allow him to become the quarterback he can be, because, you know, you got a defensive-minded head coach who is going to always be on the conservative side. But if he looks at what Mark Whipple did with Kenny Pickett, and he allows whoever, I'm assuming it's probably the end of the road for Frank Cignetti. If he brings in an offensive coordinator that really understands, you know, explosive offense and college offense, I mean, to me, this kid, I think the sky's the limit. So the season is lost, and there's not much to say about this season other than they may have found their quarterback of the future, and I think that kid's pretty good. But, of course, when you have five losses and you still have Notre Dame, Florida State, and Duke on your schedule, you ain't getting to a bowl game. So, you know, what's the purpose of watching the rest of the season where I just told you? Just see how this kid develops.
I know you wanted to talk about the World Series, Paul. Last week we talked about how the Phillies were mashing, how they were fun to watch, how the Pirates could never win like that in the postseason, and then they promptly lost 4 out of 5 to the Diamondbacks to not make the World Series. An 84-win Diamondbacks team. The various Twitter accounts that are influenced by the Pirates are out there telling anyone who will listen, oh, the Pirates aren't that far, 84 wins. Diamondbacks lost, what, a gajillion games 2 years ago. Now they're in the World Series. Anything can happen. Here's what I think will happen, Paul. Maybe they do make the World Series, and then they change the format because they cannot tolerate an 84 Pirates, you know, 84 win Pirates team in the World Series.
Well, I mean, again, I mean, this thing is the biggest thing about Major League Baseball, postseason, is that you have a short series. A lot can happen. I mean, we've seen even like in small samples. You know, the Pirates had some really good series against some of the best teams. In fact, they swept a couple of the really good teams. They had a stretch. Was it in like May or whenever it was where they won like 7 out of 9 against 3 of the best teams in the league. I forget when that was, but the thing about the Phillies is they live by the home run, you die by the home run. They just weren't able to manufacture enough runs. Those last two games especially, they couldn't manufacture runs, whereas that's what the Diamondbacks do. The other thing is their best pitchers let them down. At the end of the day, they had a formula to win, and they should have won. You got two top-of-the-line starters. You got a bunch of guys that hit home runs. But the problem is you had too many guys that, when they weren't hitting home runs, were complete and utter no-shows. And that's a formula, which is why, you know, you see teams like the Phillies go through slumps during the season, you know, where they're not scoring any runs because it's just not sustainable to keep hitting home runs at the rate that they were. So the biggest issue they had is they just had too many outs in their lineup when, you know, they weren't able to hit home runs. But the interesting thing now is you've got Texas against Arizona. I can't imagine what the ratings are going to be for that. Yeah, I mean, honestly, Adam, if you walked out on the street right now and pulled 100 people, could they tell you 5 players that are going to be involved in this World Series?
Probably not.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's never a good thing. You know, the Phillies, I thought the Phillies against the Rangers could be fun. But Arizona against the Rangers will be different. It'll be a fun game, too, because Arizona, you know, they have a formula that wins, which is basically they've been really good. Their bullpen's been really good. And you know what? They manufacture runs. They grind out runs. You know, they hit some home runs, but at the end of the day, they string together hits, and, you know, they've got some speed. They run base to base well. They play good defense. Should be a great series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And you know, Paul, I think this is where Major League Baseball fails in terms of marketing, is that you have, like, Garcia for Texas was awesome, right? He should be a household name. More people should know who he is. Ketel Marte was one of the best players in the entire postseason for Arizona. You know, how much marketing force have you put behind him? They just focus so much of the talk on the big market teams that when you have an outcome like this, yeah, it's gonna hurt the World Series because no one knows who these guys are, even though they're worth talking about. And I'm excited to see this series, even if no one else is, because I think these teams have been intriguing and interesting. So I looked at as that more of a fail on Major League Baseball's part than I do on these teams. I think there's a lot to be excited about. Paul, I'll get you out of here on this. Do the Penguins stink, or are they just figuring it out with this bottom six right now?
I think they are a team that is not nearly as good as we thought they were. They look slow still. They're still trying to play a style of hockey that does not fit their talent. They probably right now, I think they could probably rearrange some things with their power play and make it better. Their bottom six, we thought they made it better. So far, they haven't made it better. I'm just going to say, I think they'll have stretches where they play well, but they're just still the same flawed team they've been the last 4 or 5 years. You can't be anything different if you are still deferring to your three-man core, who, oh, by the way, is a year older now. And, again, at times they're going to be brilliant because it's still those three guys. At other times they're going to look slow. And they're going to look like a team that's playing a style of hockey they cannot play. So it's what it is, man. It doesn't shock me. I think they'll be a playoff team. They'll probably be able to slide into the playoffs. They'll figure some things out. They've always been pretty good at that. But, this is who they are. And you're not going to change your roster significantly when you still have the same three guys your roster is built around.
Paul, did you watch any of the Frozen Frenzy on ESPN?
I did not.
I turned it on. I flipped it on, and then I saw PK Subban cooking, and I was like, this is not NFL Red Zone, so I'm not paying attention. But, yeah, I just wanted to throw that in there before we go. Everyone else, stay tuned. We're going to have more Steelers talk on the North Shore Drive with Christopher Carter on Friday and Saturday, getting you ready for Steelers versus Jaguars. Paul will be back on Sunday for our Steelers live stream after the game. I will be in New York City celebrating my brother's wedding, so Christopher Dell will be in this seat. But still plenty of good Steelers talk. Make sure you check it out. And we'll talk to you again soon, Paul.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you enjoyed the video, please like it and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Check out our Apple Podcast channel for more podcast content. Click below for a special deal of 99 cents for a 3-month subscription to the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.